Chapter 14 Christian Scientist Association. Oh, sing unto the Lord a new song. Sing unto the Lord, all the earth. Psalm of David, 1876. The entrance of Asa Gilbert Eddy into the ranks of the Christian Scientists scarcely made a ripple. Dr. Eddy's mild manner was so self-effacing that it went practically unnoticed at the time that he was the first to call himself a Christian Science practitioner. Daniel Harrison Spofford was unquestionably the foremost among Mrs. Glover's practicing students, and there was no challenge nor thought of such from the newcomer. Thus far, Daniel Spofford had proved to be the most capable of Mrs. Glover's students, and he had met with the greatest success. It is not at all surprising that she made arrangements with him on the 11th of April to enlarge his activities by taking over the Christian Science Publishing Company. He would assume full responsibility for the sale of Science and Health and handle all the money in connection therewith. He made an agreement to pay Barry and Newhall $1,700 from any sums accruing beyond $1,200. In addition, he would be the publisher for the next edition or anything else she might write. 6 days later, on April 17th, a contract was signed in which Spofford also agreed to pay Mrs. Glover a 10% royalty on the net list price for the balance of the first edition. The net list price was $2.50. The first edition was supposed to have cost $1,000, but because of the numerous changes and corrections, had amounted to $2,285.35. Two students, George Barry and Elizabeth Newhall, had invested close to $1,700 toward its publication. Obviously, the publication of Science and Health was in its infancy, but Harry was as convinced as was Mary that it was God's gift to mankind, and had a great future. Never before had a man the opportunity that was placed in Harry Spofford's hands. Sometime after this, George Barry began to behave very peculiarly. In Mary's own words, "A noticeable change commenced in the young man, very unlike the fruits of metaphysics. Our students saw it as well as ourselves. They also noticed his neglect of the business that belonged to him and the losses it caused us. We noticed the change in his disposition and certain mental symptoms foreign to his constitution and wholly unlike himself." Before long, George Barry left Mrs. Glover's home and her circle of students. Forgotten were the sentiments and debt he had felt and once expressed poetically in a letter to his teacher, an adopted mother. "O mother mine, God grant I ne'er forget, whatever be my grief or what my joy, the unmeasured, unextinguishable debt I owe to thee, but find my sweet employ ever through thy remaining days, to be to thee as faithful as thou wast to me." Mary was mystified. From the time of her discovery of Christian Science, nearly 10 years earlier, she had had no difficulty in seeing in a person's thought the cause of their disease or difficulty. She could do this with those present or absent, and she even had unfailing success in reading the thoughts of patients of students whom she had never met nor seen. In the latter case, however, the remedy was dependent upon the student's progress, as she wrote in her first edition of Science and Health. Whenever we have taken charge of a practice to establish a student, it was not necessary for us to see the patients to heal them. If the student was not advanced spiritually, we failed to benefit the sick so much in connection with him. Mrs. Glover was constantly being called upon for help and was busy every minute. She had neither the time nor the inclination to dwell upon George's disaffection, but she was perplexed by it. Reading the human mind had been as easy for her as following a man's track along a dusty path. In George's thought, she saw no tracks to follow. Though she knew it not, the man responsible was assiduously covering and obliterating his tracks in order to deceive her. But that man was not George Berry. It was Richard Kennedy. Kennedy was working not only to separate Berry from his teacher, but to get his accomplice into Berry's position, that is, in Mrs. Glover's home, as her very closest helper. Sad to say, he accomplished his purpose. It was 5 years later, after many trials, before she wrote the following about Kennedy's mesmerism of George Berry. During a period of about 5 years, the mesmerist evidently nourished his hatred and purpose to destroy that young man, and from no cause apparent but our interest in his welfare. He finally accomplished his purpose and broke up his business relations with us through the aid of his accomplice, who was interested to obtain his position. Their united mesmerism severed a friendship that might have been profitable to us both. We doctored him gratuitously and his friends when he requested it, gave him business chances that others coveted, etc. He, having seen but about 17 summers when we first knew him, his business mistakes cost us months of labor. He copied for us and we offered to pay him, but he always refused, saying he was not doing us the good that we were doing him. And that was true, although he was then a good worker for the cause and rendering us many small services. For his sake, we taught the lady whom he wished to marry gratuitously, and endeavored to realize the obligations of the word mother that he had asked permission to call us. Had we understood then as now the demonology carried on by the aforesaid mesmerist, that young man would have been saved what will be to him the saddest recollection in his whole history. Mrs. Glover had seen much of the result of Kennedy's work, but she had thought that it was accomplished by manipulation with the mesmeric influence he exerted over his patients when rubbing their heads. Part of what she had added to the final chapter of Science and Health read, "The science of healing is incapable of evil, but this opposite practice is as clearly proved capable of great mischief, and even crime, able, while it lays high claims to right, secretly to work out a hidden wrong. Quote, more subtle than all other beasts of the field, end quote. It coils itself about the sleeper, fastens its fang in innocence, and kills in the dark. We thank wisdom that revealed this great error to us before these pages went to press, that the years we have labored to bless our fellow beings be not wholly lost through this trespass upon the blessing of mental healing. We knew of no harm that could result from rubbing the head until we learned it of this malpractice, and never since have permitted a student with our consent to manipulate. Myriad also added to the first edition of Science and Health, quote, never trust human nature in the dark. If this nature is so dark, it covers its footprints, end quote. But she had yet to uncover many of these hidden footprints through the lessons of bitter experience. At this point in Mary's experience, it seems as if the malpractitioner was always way ahead of her. But his work was in the dark, and his footprints such that even he was afraid to have them seen. Such iniquity and workers of iniquity are destined for oblivion. Mary's work was in the open for all the world to see, and for the benefit of all humanity. Her footprints are fadeless. In the words of a poet, footprints that perhaps another, sailing o'er life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seeing shall take heart again. Pursued and harassed by all the machinations of malicious minds, the revelator to this age took the forward steps that are imperishable. 100 years earlier, our founding fathers had pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to found a new order which would provide, quote, liberty and justice for all, end quote. Many who so pledged were persecuted and destroyed. But the idea came forth and grew from that simple declaration of independence into a great nation. In the small town of Lynn, Massachusetts, unnoticed by the world, on Independence Day, July 4, 1876, Mrs. Glover and six of her students made a solemn pledge, which is also destined to grow into greatness. This small beginning embraces the only means for preserving and maintaining the freedom and the great nation our fathers envisioned. Of this momentous step, Mrs. Eddy wrote simply, quote, the first Christian Scientist Association was organized by myself and six of my students in 1876 on the centennial day of our nation's freedom, end quote. The Constitution and strict bylaws were written by Mrs. Glover. Jesus' mission had renamed Israel Christianity. Mary's mission had renamed Christianity Christian Science. The preamble to the Constitution states, this association was organized in the summer of 1876 on the centennial day of our nation's independence. Christian Science and purely mental healing were founded in 1866 by Mrs. Mary Baker Glover, author of Science and Health, published in 1875. Said author gave to Christianity its new name after her discovery, to wit, that a divine principle and given rule applicable to every condition of man and constituting the divine plan of his salvation from sin, sickness, and death exist in the order of eternal life, truth, and love. And that Jesus demonstrated for man's example and his redemption this holy principle of divine science, healing the sick, casting out devils, error, and raising the dead, clearly showing by this divine understanding and proof the indivisibility of science and Christianity. The signers of this new declaration of freedom were as relentlessly pursued and persecuted mentally as had been their predecessors physically a century earlier. Nearly all were overcome by the enemy, but the idea came forth and grew from that humble beginning.